Good morning. This is October the 15th, 1992, Thursday, and we're having the second part of a lecture by Maitreya, The Fourth Seal.
Everybody ready? Yeah? What are you ready about? Are you taping this? Yeah, okay. All right. Well, remember we discussed yesterday about how Prophet Muhammad was called to his mission. It's the most important thing for us to realize that it was that God has already promised to Abraham that there's going to be two nations from his children, and there's going to be territorial position, and the Messiah come from each of them. If you understand that, they are the unified Jews, Christians, and Muslims together. Because if God promised both his children that there is going to be a Messiah comes, or a prophet come from him, then it's all in the Bible. And the people that are supposed to follow the Bible, three of them, Jews and Christians and Muslims. And if we recognize that, really, my lecture is finished. Yeah, okay. The only thing we are going to talk about is mostly why, Islam came and what was, the purpose for it to come, what was the prophecy about it, and what it's going to bring to humanity, and the rest is mostly history. That's how it happens. So, for us, the most important thing is to realize that God said that's how he's going to do it. Okay. And that is our faith because of that prophecy, that revelation. Okay. God promised Abram and Abram both. So because of that, we believe in both Christ and Prophet Muhammad. Of course, Moses and all those things. So with this, also it is in not only in that promise, as we explained, it's in also in the Revelation, okay, the seven seals that's going to come. And so Islam is a part of the seven seals, and that is also revealed in the Great Sign. That's another confirmation about that should have come. Now, let's, of course, why it came, we're going to, explain, and so let's just explain what happened historically and how it evolved, to Islam and covered almost one-third of the population on Earth. And, of course, when he received the revelation and he accepted, the first person who accepted Islam was whom? Who accepted the first? Who was the first person who accepted Islam? No, after Muhammad. Muhammad says, okay. Okay, who had to accept it eventually, but who was the first person who accepted Islam? That's right, Khadija was the first one. Okay. Who was the second one?
Cousin.
Yeah, right. His cousin. His, as we said, Muhammad was raised with his uncle. Okay, and his uncle had a child that he left to Muhammad's care when he was 10 years old, and he is called Ali. And and the third one was?
Didn't he have a son?
Later on.
Oh.
Yeah. Comes later. Actually, he doesn't stay alive. He dies when he was 6 years old.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, his uncle came to the church.
No, he didn't. Yeah. That's just how much. Huh?
The movie that we watched, Uncle Dick.
No. Even in movie, Uncle never did. He protected Muhammad, but he never became Muslim. Actually, that is a very well known story that he also raised him. He never became a Muslim.
The other uncle.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of family and uncles and things eventually become become converted to his belief, but not the one who raised him. Not the one who raised him. Okay, the one who raised him, he protected him. He was the head of the his tribe. Okay, and then and he raised him because, as we said, he was an orphan. But the time he was 6 years old. That's interesting. He was the orphan when he was 6 years old, and his son dies when he is 6 years old. It's interesting. Thing. But anyway, he raised him, but he never accepted Islam. But the third person who became a Muslim called Abu Bakr, and he was a prominent businessman and well known in the Quraysh, and then few other prominent people start becoming converted to Islam in that area, and. That's how actually the leaders of the Quraysh became really alert and really alarmed. You know, what is going on here? A lot of people are getting converted to this new thing. And of course, he chose the name Allah for the name of God. Allah comes from the root Elohim, Il-El, Allah. You know, and even Aloha in Hawaiian. No island. Okay. So it's not something Prophet Muhammad made it up, the name of God. It was known by Jewish people. It was known by, you know, Hindus and those people. El actually Yah at the end of most of the names refers to God. Just Hallelujah, you know, Jeremiah, Yah, you know, all those Yah at the end, you know, goes for the name of. And Al also was the name of God, and Ali and Aloha and Elo, Eli and all those things, all related to the name of God. And of course, he started his mission, but the problem was, you know, there was a lot of preachers there, you know, in his time, and everybody accepted him as a, you know, a spiritual teacher and this and that, but. What he was saying was, there is no God but God. Okay? And he's invisible, he doesn't have any partner, and he is the only God you have to worship. He's formless, nameless, invisible. And idols in a Kaaba, when there's only one God but God, the idols in the Kaaba is no longer their God. You know, and that is what made the leaders become very upset, because that's all the base power was on Kaaba, okay, and they would become pilgrimage and bring their money and the business and everything there. That is when they start opposing him, and when the opposition start growing, okay, they send they went and talked to his uncle and said, you better go and talk to your, you know, nephew and tell him that. Stop this thing, you know, it's going to hurt us a lot, and we don't, if he just say that is his God and the other God is okay, we're just going to fine. We're going to give him a good position, a lot of money and everything he wants, but stop saying that, you know, there's only one God, there's no God beside him. And his uncle went to him and said, that's what the people in Korea, you know, the leaders of the city want you to do. He said, if you put the moon in one my hand and the sun in another, I will not stop, you know, my mission. And he was very uncompromising about, you know, that matter. And that's why Islam has become very uncompromising to put any partner for God. You know, that is one of the points that there is a friction between Christian and Muslim. You know, Muslim said there is no God but Allah, and he has no partner, no son or anything like that. And then when Christians said, you know, Christ was the Son of God, that is create some friction between them. Of course, there's a poet in Persia that he explains in a poem how Christ and Allah and all those things, they are from the same source. He is a Sufi, of course, you know, which sees the meaning behind what Christ meant, something like that. But that is one point that is very uncompromising principle in Islam, that there's no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet. So the opposition starts raising, but because of the structure of, you know, Arabia, the tribes, okay, would protect their people. Okay, if you belong to a tribe, the whole tribe was behind you. Okay, it was very important that you be belong to some tribe. If you didn't have any tribe, actually, the worst thing that would happen to an Arab was if you were excommunicated from a tribe. You were just fair game to other tribes. You know, you didn't have any protection. And as far as the Muhammad's uncle was alive, everybody didn't try even touch him, you know, because they were afraid that his tribe, because his uncle says, "I'm going to protect him. You know, he's under my protection." And but some of his followers didn't have that kind of protection. Some of them didn't have a very powerful tribe and things like that. So the leaders of the Mecca start prosecuting them. Okay, and then Muhammad told them, then those people that don't have that kind of protection, they would go to a Sassanias. I guess it's one of the Abbasids. There was a Christian kingdom in the south of Arabia and in the North Africa and south of Saudi Arabia. And he said, "You go to that country because that king is just and he's going to give you protection." And actually, the Quraysh sent a delegate that to bring them back. You saw it in the movie, and yeah. Anyway, they stayed there until later on when Muhammad went to Medina. And when it was fine for Muhammad until his uncle dies. When his uncle dies, the head of the new head of the tribe, which was his other uncle, this uncle was very opposed to Prophet Muhammad. So he said, "No, I'm not going to protect him. If you guys want to get him, go get him." And then that, of course, they were prosecuted and everything, and Prophet Muhammad realized that his mission is not getting anywhere in Mecca. You know, it's all opposition, and you know, they're just not listening to his message. So he was looking probably for, you know, somewhere else he can, you know, expand his message. So it happens that some of the people from Medina came to him, you know, in 2 years, and asked him if he would come and stay with them and become their leader. And the first year they came, and he said, "Why don't you guys go, and I will accept it, but go and talk with your other groups and see what they say." And next year, 4 times the number of the first year come to him and ask him, you know, "We want you, yeah, we want in Medina." And eventually he decided, "Yes, I'm going to go to Medina." And in the night that the people in Quraysh decide to go and apparently kill him, because there was no longer he had a protection, he flees away. He runs away, and that has become the that's called Hajj, hijra, or flight. That's become the point that Muslims have as their dating. It starts in hijra. Okay. And then, of course, Ali is Ali that we talked about. He sits in his place, because he had a place that he used to sit, and it was in front of a window. You can see him, that Muhammad sitting there. So Ali put his robe and his hat and sits there whole day, but he leaves early in the morning. Okay. At night they come to kill him, and they saw the moment their device was that one person of each tribe are going to come and they do it all together. So everybody's going to be guilty. Nobody's going to finger point to a person. And they come in and they ready to do it, and they realize that it's Ali in the bed. It's not the Prophet Muhammad. And they say, "What happened?" He tells them that he went away. And they go after him to find him. Actually, there's a story that he and Abu Bakr, they go together to Medina. And they see this horsemen are coming, so they go inside the cave. And the moment they go inside the cave, there's an a spider comes over right away and make a web, right?
One day they're not there, and then the next day there's this huge web to
get them. And I guess they still like me, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the people of the Quraysh come, and they come to the cave, and they said, the spider, and it says, they can't be here. If they have gone inside, a spider will break up. So they don't go in, and they leave him alone, and the next day they come out, and they take, you know, I guess probably they just walked from Paddy, because they didn't want to attract too much attention. They even didn't take their, you know, horses or camels, or I guess the camel was somewhere else. I don't remember exactly how it went, but eventually they get to Medina. In Medina, of course, when he gets there, the people all come. There's a lot of strife is between Medinan people. Okay? They can't just bring peace to themselves. Okay, so that is actually they were looking for somebody come and, you know, come an arbitrator and bring peace to them. So when he comes over, they all go to him and say, well, we all accept whatever you say because we know you're trustworthy, and we accept whatever you, you know, judge among us. And so they create a kind of a constitution or something they write down, the rights and the wrongs and how they treat each other and things like that. So Prophet Muhammad drafts something like that and sits with them, and everybody says, okay, fine, we accept that. And in a very short period of time, he brings peace to Medina, and everybody's kind of living, you know, peacefully. And of course, they accept, most of them become Muslim. And he says, the people, the Muslim from Medina, Mecca is the brothers of the Muslim of Medina, and the Muslim from Medina start moving little by little from Mecca to Medina. And because they didn't want to attract too much attention, they didn't have any belonging. They just would walk away from Mecca and come to Medina. They didn't have any money or any belonging or something like that. So people of Medina, Muhammad said, the people of Mecca are your brothers, and so you give them, you know, subsistence, place to live and food and be with them and all that. And so they become kind of a brothers. And he start, of course, as leader there, and he start making laws and regulations between how the relationship is, how the between tribes and people, and eventually he proclaimed that whoever is in Islam are one. And that was a revolutionary idea among Arabs, that whoever belongs to a tribe, that is it. You that is where your belonging is. So it just destroyed that kind of a, you know, gridlock that they had. You know, where tribe are you from? You know, what family? Just like what family you are from, and because of you belong to that family, you are better than other person. He says no. Whoever in Islam and is good and does good and does his duty to God, he is better person than other person. So. That's also made people, you know, the opposed to him much even more opposed to him, because that was just, according to them, was destroying the whole fabric of their, you know, society. Yeah. But he again didn't compromise. That's the way it is, and that's what God wants me to do, and that's the way. If you, of course, he also start facing Jerusalem in the beginning for their prayer, you know, and everything. And later on, he suddenly, you know, the revelation came to him, no, face the Mecca. So he faced Mecca. There was another strife there, and people start saying, you know, what you're talking about, you have to face this. So, but kind of a purification, you know, to cut off those people who weren't, you know, strong enough to stay with him. He just did whatever came to him. So, with all these things, you know, the Quraysh start feeling pretty much pressure from Medina. Medina also was in the way of the caravans of the Meccans. You know. The caravan should have come right close by and go away. And they felt, you know, if Muhammad, you know, gain more power, he can even just close the route, and they're going to be, you know, pretty much in a bad situation. So politically and geopolitical situation of the Medina was in such a way that the Mecca needed to have that route open. Okay. So they start opposing Muhammad, and they start, you know, raiding and doing things that his follower didn't like, and they wanted to fight back. You know, but Muhammad said, no, be peaceful, don't do it. But little by little, you know, followers start putting a lot of pressure on him, you know, that we want to fight, and, you know, we can't stand, you know, their aggression. So eventually, you know, he gave in, and I don't know, he gave in or God gave in, but but that is also prophesied, that as we remember in the in Revelation, the fourth seal says, you know, they're going to conquer the world with, you know, a quarter of the world with sword. Okay, that's exactly what happened to Islam. Okay, so they picked up the sword and they start a battle with the Meccans. And Meccans, of course, came, and the first battle, of course, Muslim won, and that pretty much, you know, was very big, you know, blow to the ego of the Meccans, because they were four times of the number of the Muslims, and they just won the battle. Okay, that Meccans didn't have no doubt they are going to win the battle. Okay, because I guess they had only two horses, and Meccans had around 100 horses, and they had a lot of people, that there have been many wars. Most of the people with Muhammad were, you know, the slaves and the lower people in the society, and they were never in battle. So they said, we're going to just go get these people, you know, in four times. And when they go and they lose it. So that's pretty, you know, hurtful to them. So next year, they come in even larger people, and that battle they win. Actually, Muslim win in the beginning. And what happened was, suddenly the people they were supposed to hold a position, they see the rest of the Muslim are going to go get the booties. You know, they say, oh, we're going to lose. We better just leave our position. And the leader says, no, don't do that. But they just say, no, you want to get all that, you know, thing from the other people. So they leave their position, and there was another people with the horse. They come from the back behind the Muslim, and in the battle, almost Muhammad gets killed, but he runs to the mountain and they leave him alone. And of course, then the revelation comes that from now on, the booties are going to be distributed equally. It doesn't matter who get it. They're going to be put together and be... So there's not going to be... If you're in a position, you don't have to leave to get the booty. You're going to get it anyway. So that battle is lasted. Next battle comes, of course, this time Muslim win the battle, and I guess that's it. I guess they had only three battles together. And then, of course, after a while, Prophet Muhammad decides to go to pilgrimage to Mecca. So he gets all the followers, and they start going to all the Meccans become very upset about it, and said, what is this? You know, we had fight with him and everything. Now he wants to come and for pilgrimage, and that is the month you can't fight. Okay, that is the Ramadan, the month of Ramadan, and so they can't fight with him. That's the law, that's the regulation. So he start coming to all the Meccan. You know, they will get more upset and more upset because they can take the sword, and they're afraid maybe they're going to take the sword and all that. And so they send a delegate to tell him, don't come. You know, we're not going to let you in. And But if you want to come next year. You know, that's what they say, we talk about it. So the Prophet Muhammad says, okay. He returns. And actually, they make a pact. That, I don't know, they make a pact in the first pilgrimage or the second pilgrimage? The first pilgrimage. Okay. They make a pact that they're not going to fight for 10 years. Okay, they're going to have peace. Each other, but he can come next year. So he says he accepts the pact. That's another big upheaval among Prophet Muhammad's followers, and they don't want to have a pact. They want to say, we want two wars. We almost want three wars. Why do you want to make a pact with them? Go and get the Mecca. You know, just don't make a pact. Let's just go get them. You know, and he has to really work hard and give a lot of sad song and say, please, you know. And eventually, you know, made this wall and says, okay, I actually accepted and so that 10 years of peace. And of course, next year he goes and he does pilgrimage and everything. And then actually that 10 years of the peace, it didn't stay 10 years, but that 10 years of the peace pact become the most, the period that most people are converted to Islam, because there was no war and there was a lot of preacher going around and talk about the new message, and a lot of, you know, people heard the message, converted and realized what he was able to create more peace among the, you know, Meccans, you know, and all that. And I guess it was the fifth or sixth years of that peace that suddenly there was another strife between Muslim and other tribes, Quraysh people. So they, Prophet Muhammad said, you broke the pact. You weren't supposed to attack Muslim. You weren't supposed to do this. And so you broke the pact. We don't have any pact anymore. So he, after the pact was gone, Prophet Muhammad started marching toward the Mecca. Okay, said, I'm coming. And he started with very few people, you know, around a couple of thousand people to Mecca. But as he marched, the people started coming and joining them. You know, by the time they got to Mecca, there are so many people, Meccans, Zeras, they have no chance, you know, to fight them. So the leader of the Mecca actually goes to the Muhammad camp and converts to Islam, and Muhammad says, okay, we're not going to even touch one tree of it. You just go to your houses and stay in. So he just comes into Mecca with no opposition, nothing, and that was it. He become the leader and the king and the ruler of the whole Meccans and Medina, and the other tribes start all coming one after another and joining them. And after the first period, the whole fragmented in India Arabs become one unified, you know, nation, and under one leader and one religion. So for the first time, actually, Arabs were ever unified, you know, because they were very scattered, the different oases, and each oasis had their own leaders and their own tribe and their own regulation, their laws, and also a very loose law governed them, but they never was unified at all. They were all separated and fighting and skirmish and thing between them. So, But he of course doesn't stay. One of the things happens was he forgive all those people who did bad to him or were against him or they were enemy. And that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of his followers didn't appreciate much. They wanted revenge and they wanted to get them. And he said no. And he actually gave a lot of good positions to them and made them, you know. But the Quraysh also, you know, joined his forces with them. So now he had a large army and making laws and regulations, and just like the whole laws and regulations he brought through Islam become the laws and regulations of Muslims. And of course, he never stayed in Mecca. He goes back to Medina, and that's become the center of his place that he started his rulership. And after, I guess, 1 or 2 years, I guess he comes the next year for the pilgrimage, and he gives his last speech that he says he has perfected his religion and that God gave him, and that was Muslim, and all Muslim are brothers and sisters together and all that. And the next year he doesn't come to the pilgrimage and then dies. He just gets one headache or something, and after 3 days, I guess, he just dies, of course. After he dies, suddenly, again, all the Arabs get together and say, let's each of us have our own leader. Okay. The bad habits of the past start coming out, and they just wanted to have their own leader and separation, and they don't want to have nothing to do with the thing. Actually, Omar, one of the Muhammad's followers come and say, no, Muhammad is not dead. Okay, he's just, you know, he's still with us. And Abu Bakr says, no, Muhammad is dead. He always said, I am just a messenger of God, and I'm a man, and I'm nothing, and I'm just like any other man die. And so he stops any rumor or anything like that as a personal cult creation, okay, right there. And eventually they come together, and Ali, Omar, one of the general of Muhammad, suggests that we should not have many leaders. We should have only one leader for our Muslims, and he nominates Abu Bakr because he was an older man, and he was very liked with everyone, and he had a kind of a lot of people would, you know, accept him as the leader, and everybody accepts it. So next day he will come and make a covenant with him, and he become the leader, the new leader of the, and they call him Khalifa. Khalifa means something like I guess leader of the believers, something like that, I guess. So he was become the first Khalifa of the Muslim. Of course, the lot of tribes split. They say, no, we're not going to follow you guys. So they have to go back and fight for 2 years and bring them back all under control of the Islam again. And in the time of Abu Bakr, mostly that's what they did. They tried to solidify Muslim as one unit again. And after Muslim, Abu Bakr, of course, it was people who choose Omar. Omar was the one who made Abu Bakr the first Khalifa. So Omar become the Khalifa now, and he's a general, and he's the person who really start the conquest for Arabs. And he attacks Persia and Byzantine Roman Empire, and both Persian Empire and Roman Empire, they were at each other's throat for hundreds of years. And by this time they were exhausted, both exhausted of many wars they had together. So by this time Arabs really didn't have any opposition. They just ran over Persia and Byzantine and went to Egypt and North Africa, and 100 years they conquered almost, you know, 3/4 of the known earth then. And that's another miracle there. But as we said, that was prophesied that they're gonna conquer the earth with the sword, and that's exactly what they did. And then after Omar, of course, is the Osman, and the after that is Ali. This is the first four successor of Prophet Muhammad. Of course, when Omar was the Khalifa, he created a body, a council of the tribes, and the council of the tribes were supposed to choose the new Khalifa, the new successor. And that's what they did after Omar. They chose Osman and then Ali. And of course, Ali was a very charismatic person. He had his own followers. And from the very beginning of the time, after death of Muhammad, a lot of people were said the next person have to come from Muhammad's family. Okay. And they were, of course, meant Ali. Okay. And but a lot of other people says, no, it doesn't have to be, you know, the family Muhammad. But they said, no, the spirit of, you know, family is, they had kind of, actually most of the people who said that were Persians, Iranians, because they always have kings, and the king's son become, you know, king and on. So they had a feeling that, well, now it has come from, it's very hard to break old habits, isn't it? Okay, the Arabs wanted to, everybody has their own leaders, and the Persians want make it a dynasty. So they said, no, they have to be from Muhammad's family. Of course, they had also political reasons, because Persians never accepted Arabs as superior to themselves, because they always felt, oh, we were civilized and had such a great kingdom, and we had, you know, empire, and they had empires for hundreds of years, and they were you know, running everybody else around the, you know, that empire, and so they were, you know, compared equally themselves with the Roman Empire, and they never accepted, you know, the defeat. They didn't want to accept the defeat. So politically, they somehow they wanted to break this up. Okay, so, and also of course they was used to, you know, dynasty and kingdom. They had king for 2,000 years, and later on again it became kingdom. Okay, so it was very hard for them to do that. And after Ali became Khalifa, of course, there was a lot of opposition, and they said he was not very fast in making decisions, and he wasn't very, you know, strong in implementing them. Then a lot of people started opposing him, and there was upheaval, and even Prophet Muhammad's wife, Aisha, even opposed him, and because Ali said, you know, Muhammad's wife don't have to have that much of a, you know, money for their expenses. What do you call allowances? Okay, he started cutting their allowances a little bit. So Aisha got upset with that, and she started opposing him, and there was a war, and eventually Ali wins, but it creates bad feeling between Muslim again. So, so by this time, of course, Islam was in a, you know, upheaval position. Let's get 5 minutes of break. Get a cup of tea or coffee or not coffee. Spam? What's that thing look like?
A Peru.
Any question? Any suggestion? Lecture. Okay, so at this time, you know, Islam, as we said, is started splitting, and there's a lot of upheaval and everything, and suddenly there's a great strife between two people, Ali as a new caliph and a person in Syria by the name Wa'id, I guess his name that was, but he is the first person who was the Prophet Muhammad conquered and in Mecca and gave him new position and give them the place in Syria to be there, and he claims that he is the new Khalifa, and a lot of Muslims accepted him because he was a powerful leader and thing, and Ali eventually was assassinated. Okay, and he becomes the new Khalifa, but not by choosing him, but by political maneuvering and power and this. So he become Khalifa, and then he created dynasty. Okay. So the whole idea of choosing Khalifa through the, you know, concession of the tribes and this falls apart. It's become Islam become dynasty. Just actually, you can say almost the whole idea of Islam was destroyed right there. Okay, and the kingdom also, it was the kingdom for a while, but it actually stops there right away. And it had to happen like that, because it wasn't supposed to bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. It's supposed to bring the law to humanity, okay, the divine law. As we said, remember the prophecy by Israel, to the children of Israel, and he gave the law-giving to the tribe of Judah, okay, until the Shiloh come, and after that it's going to be taken away from them and given to another nation. And exactly what Christ said when at the last departure, when they crucify him, he said, you know, the law giving will be taken away from you, okay, and it's going to be given to another nation. And did Christ brought any laws? He didn't bring any laws. Okay. He brought the grace, but he didn't bring any laws. But the next prophet after him, when he comes, he brings the law. Okay. So, Muhammad, actually, that's even the people who study Islam, for 200-300 years, most of the thing Muslim did, they created law schools. And they tried to analyze the laws that Prophet Muhammad brought and make them, you know, and discuss it and argue about it and have a different classes of thought. And they created different schools of thought about what these laws means. And eventually they came with the concept of Sharia. Sharia really means the path, the way. And the whole idea is to find what is the divine laws, okay, and implement them in the society. Okay. So the whole thing falls right to the prophecy, okay, that the lawgiving will be taken away from Judah and will be given another nation. And the Christ comes says the same thing, that it's going to be taken away from you and given another nation. And Christ doesn't bring any law himself. And then Prophet Muhammad comes and the whole religion becomes a kind of a concentration of law on the society and how you can bring justice to society. So the laws who brought to, you know, by Prophet Muhammad are the law has to be accepted as the laws for the society and follow them. And but by the time this person became the new Khalifa, okay, the movement that the Khalifa have to come from the family of Muhammad become even more stronger because they see this person has nothing to do with the Islam, is not even one of the close followers of Muhammad, and he become the new Khalifa and take over and create dynasty. So there's a lot of dissatisfaction with this new king and new Khalifa. So there's a movement that starts, okay, which is called Shia. Those are called Sunni. Sunni means those who follow the Sun means kind of a your example. Okay, Sunni means the people who follow the example of Prophet Muhammad, and that's it. They don't believe anybody else is going to go after them. But Shia are the people. What Shia means? I don't remember. Shia, or the people, they say, no, the people who have to come from after Prophet Muhammad have to be from the family of Prophet Muhammad. That's what they believe the real Khalifa after Prophet Muhammad was supposed to be from his family, and they believe that Ali should have been the first Khalifa. But of course, when Prophet Muhammad died, Ali was a very young man. And Arabs never choose a young man as their leader, okay? And they usually choose the older man, older person, which is, you know, respected and accepted and tried out, and there's some they trust and all that thing. So it was impossible for Arabs to accept him as their first Khalifa. That's what they accept Abu Bakr, which was an older man and all that, and then Umar, which is again older, and then Osman, which is older. But this time, of course, Ali is an older man. Okay, and they say, okay, now you can become Khalifa. Okay, but the whole idea was because this new Khalifa comes over and he doesn't really enforce Islamic laws or anything, these movements become a kind of a split between Islam, which mostly are Sunnis, and Shia. Of course, in Shia itself, there is many different branches. 7 Imam Shia, and 12 Imam Shia, and 9 Imam Shia, and many, many other, you know, branches they start. But that is the difference between these branches, the successor. Who should succeed Prophet Muhammad? And that makes difference between Sunnis and Muslims. And any question? Any answers? So Islam brings a. Is it a good question? Is it necessary? Is it good? Okay, go ahead. What's the question?
After Muhammad, when he died, the successor, the first caliph, did they kept the whole Quran, didn't they? And gave that to the people?
The Quran never was written down.
That was something they showed in the movie, a scroll, but that wasn't correct, was it? It wasn't written down. They showed.
That's right. Actually, there were that was another. That's what they call it, Quran, another miracle, because it was so easy to memorize. Okay. And they, yeah.
Okay. Did the first caliph, when they chose Ali Bakr to be the
Abu
first,
Bakr.
Mm-hmm. Ali Bakr.
Abu.
Abu Bakr.
Yeah. Okay.
To be the first caliph. Was he? Spiritual,
like Muhammad. I mean, did he have those energies to go out to people? Well, he wasn't prophet. Okay,
right.
Okay. That is the whole idea. Muhammad was not only a prophet, but also the leader. Okay, he was both a spirit and the law at the same time. Okay, and that was his very unique position. That is why when he died, everybody stayed there. So in a sense, Khalifa, as I said, became the leader of the believers. So he no longer is the prophet. He no longer is the lawmaker. Okay. That is why they start trying to implement those laws that Prophet Muhammad brought to every situation. And then later they realize that it doesn't apply to every situation. There's a lot of situation that Prophet Muhammad didn't bring any law about it because there was no situation arise. And as the kingdom become larger and bigger and new, you know, decision had to be made, they couldn't use those anymore. So they have to sit down and discuss it and try to bring the spirit to the law. And that is why those law schools started, and eventually four branches, it became to four branches of thought about, you know, those laws. And they called that body of laws together as Sharia, the way. So we can see really that kingdom started for a very short period of time and for a very small part of the day. But as we said, the most important thing is that the law giving will be come from the next prophet. Okay? And of course, grace came with Isa, and law came with Prophet Muhammad. Okay? Now, has humanity understood message and teaching of Prophet Muhammad? What is the message of Prophet Muhammad?
Submission.
What is that? That's the highest spiritual realization, submission. If you become surrendered to God and surrender the result to God, then you know that actually the result of your actions. So you're free. You become submissive. Again, you become what? You become channel for God, and you are free of attachment. Actually, that is the way not to be attached to your actions, because you know God's gonna do it through you. And He brought the divine laws, as we said. You know, Sharia. Sharia means to inquire and find what is the will of God in every situation. And the will of God is what? To bring justice. Okay. So in every situation, we have to bring justice to that situation. Okay. Are we just in this situation or not? If there is a law in the land, is that law just? Okay. If it is not just, then it is not God's law. The Spirit is not there. Of course, as the laws, as these schools, the four school of thought, okay, evolved, they eventually, after 200-300 years, they reached a point that that's it. We did all the work and we discussed it. We came to these conclusions. So it is perfect as it is, and so nobody can add anything to it or subtract of it, and they decided that they reached the end of their lawmaking. And that's when the Spirit left it. Okay, whenever you say this is the final thing, that is when the spirit leaves you. Okay, and you see, there is no other way. I have the truth. Okay, and there is nothing else besides what I know. Is when you are at death, you are end of it. If you accept the dogma and say this dogma is the truth, and I don't need anything else, you are dead. And you close yourself to a spirit, to the flexibility of the spirit, and being able to adapt yourself to different situations. You're dead. You think that. That's why the legalism, okay, came to the Muslim communities. You know, legalistic approach to the law. You know. If you do this and this and this, you have to do this and this and this. If this happened this way, this is the cure for it. So it become very legalistic, and they were a kind of a, what you call those people, they follow dogmas and things like that.
Intellectual spiritualists.
Tradition it is? No. Conservatives? Fundamentalists, exactly. Thanks. But fundamentalists, so they call it fundamentalists, okay? They call it mullahs and established, you know, system, okay? So the spirit died. There was no longer was a spirit in the laws. That is when we see a movement start in Muslim called Sufism, okay? Now, kind of a love was a split from a spirit, okay? A spirit goes to Sufis, and law and legalist doing thing goes to the fundamentalist, exactly. And they, of course, the Sufis come and they meditate and they dance and they chant and they sing and they have different philosophy and this, and they, some of them even come out and they say I'm God and they start dancing, and suddenly do that fundamentalist, there is God and Prophet Muhammad and the rest, that's it, you are the rest of humanity. And you come and you say, I'm God, it's just a no-no in that kind of an environment. So it became very rigid environment. Okay. And that is why later on we can see most of the Islam is spread not by Muslims, but by Sufis. Okay. Just like India. Okay. Most of India has been conquered with Sufis or other parts of the world. And the fundamentalists, of course, start opposing the Sufis. You know, still, there is a lot of tension goes on with the Sufis and fundamentalists in the Islamic world. But eventually, of course, Sufis realize that they can live in that environment if they continue doing this. So they said, the people who go to that state of ecstasy and they jump and they say they are God, they really don't mean it. They really mean this. They try to somehow fit into the thing. So there's a lot of different idea evolved from that Sufism, and they try to fit into the society at the same time, you know, preach their own teachings. But that way of thinking eventually evolved to a branch in Islam which is called the Ismailis. Okay. And that is where Bab comes from. Bab and the Baha'u'llah and the Baha'i religion, that comes from that branch of Islam. And eventually, you know, that because they believe that somebody is going to come, but which that's where going to come next year. See, everything is connected together. And also, the Prophet Muhammad said the truth. And whenever you say the truth, what happens? It hurts a lot of people's ego and, you know, concepts and things like that. And, you know, they try to, you know, shun you, destroy you, oppose you, and all that. And but the word of God always prevails. And that's what we have to hang on to the word of God. Not our own tradition, not our own thinking, not our own beliefs, but what God tells us. And if we don't see the truth in this, then we, of course, have our own concepts and doubts and you know, the thoughts and concept comes in, and you know why accept Muhammad? You know, Christ is the only way, and if that's it, there's nobody gonna come after that. Or we are the chosen people. Okay, we shouldn't accept Christ, you know, because we are Jews and we are chosen people, and there's stuff no good. Or we have the look at the goal of the life is to merge to God. None of them is good. Nobody is chosen. Nobody is the only way, and nobody is the last prophet. Okay. Of course, there's another misconception but misunderstanding in Islam, that there is a word in Quran. It says Muhammad is the Khatam or Khatem of prophets, and they take it as the last prophet. Okay. And that is one of the belief in that Ismail, Lee's, that branch that Bob came from, was that really doesn't mean Khatam. It means Khatam. Khatam means the seal of the prophet. And if you look at the great sign, you know, as we explained, he brought the highest spiritual realization. So in a way, he is the end of the prophet in bringing the highest spiritual realization, and he's at the top of the great sign, and just like a seal in your ring on a prophet. So it explains both of them here in the great sign, what that word means, and both of those words is true. You don't can bring anything greater than being submissive to God. You know, if you're submissive to God, you made it. Okay, spiritually you made it. Okay. What is more than that? Than being submissive to the will of God. Okay. And also it is the seal of the prophet, and it's in the ring, it's the top of the ring. So that both meaning make sense. Of course he suffered, he was starved, he was stoned, he was, almost got killed, you know, but the courage and all that, as we said here, you know, we didn't have these things here in this mission, because God somehow provided this environment for us that at least physically, you know, they can't do. Probably a lot of people like to do that. Okay, but probably they don't. They can't do it because of the environment that God created for us and that, which is fine. But of course, we have a lot of intellectual and mental stress and persecution, which is fine. You know, we should get stronger and stronger. Even that shouldn't bother us at all. We should just say the word, the truth, and just leave it on that. And as we create the communities of light, and the other people see the beauty of the communities of light, and we implement the law, and the people become stronger and more, you know, in tune with God and follow God's will, you know, they eventually see that's the only way to go. Okay. This time is not only for Arabs, it's not only for Jews or Christians or Muslims, this time is for everyone. Even Prophet Muhammad, you know, in a sense, a lot of people say, you know, that was only for Arabs, it was an Arabic, you know, revelation, which is true at the same time, because God did what? God promised Abram that a prophet is going to come from his child, Ishmael, which were Arabs. So kind of Islam came for Arabs, but of course, Persians weren't the followers of one God. They had Ahura Mazda, but of course they had all other gods beside him. So they weren't, you know, one God religion. So they also were included, and other people, you know, there. But they couldn't change all the Christians to Muslim, and all the Jews to Muslim, and all the Hindus to Muslim, and all the, you know, other peoples to Muslim, because, you know, they were necessary. As we know, in the Great Sign, there are seven seals. We need Hindus. Okay, Hindus is a part of the seven seals, a mystical part of the religion. Even Sufism is a mystical path. When it came to Islam, Islam didn't accept it. They still, you know, have a problem with it, because the mystical path says you can become God. And Islam, the fundamentalist says, no, we can't. Or that's God and Muhammad and the rest, no good. You can't make it up there. But mystical path says you can become God. But that doesn't mean You know, everybody has the potential to become God. A lot of people say, I am God, but I have my ego, and I have all these problems in my life, and I don't know how to solve them, but still I am God. You see, if you are God, you shouldn't have those problems. You should be one with God. You have to have the energy of God, and you'll be able to solve your problems, and not only yours, other people's problems too. So being God is not just a word. It's a spirit that comes through. Okay, a spiritual message of the Prophet Muhammad. Okay. Symbolic meaning of the life of Prophet Muhammad. Symbol of the first four seal. Okay. He came in the fourth seal. So he meditated, and he was a kind of a mystic until he received the revelation. He created the community, and he sacrificed for it, and he was submissive and surrender to God. So he represented the fourth seal. He was a universalist. Okay. Symbolic meaning of the Prophet Muhammad acting as a king. Did God say he's going to be a scepter and a material position? So he came as a king. He had the scepter and he reached the material position. As Christians call Christ the king of the Jews, he was as a king, and of course the Christians received their share of the earth. Submission to the will of God, that is his message. The Islam comes from the root taslim. Taslim means to be submissive and surrender to God. And only with surrendering will his will be done and the comings of light manifested. The card of Gethsemane. Okay, what was the last conversation between Christ and God? It was in the Garden of Gethsemane, wasn't it? He was supposed to go be crucified. And he says, can you take this cup from me? He wasn't completely surrendered. He didn't want. As I say, it hurts to put a nail through your hand and get you vinegar and put your hanging on there. But he wasn't wanting to do it. He wasn't completely submissive yet. And he says, can you take this cup from me? And then right away he realizes, oh, what am I doing here? I'm supposed to be here. And he says, thy will be done, not mine. Okay. And then next lifetime, he comes as a completely surrendered and submissive person to will of God. Okay. So if I accept he's the person who brings all these seals to humanity, then Muhammad is the same as Christ of Isa, the same people. Okay. Actually, Islam means, in a sense, Islam, isn't it? Islam. Okay, and then, okay, he learns that he should become submissive and surrender, and the next time he comes as a Prophet Muhammad, and he is submissive and surrender one. And of course, without the submission and surrendering to God, the coming of light is impossible. There's a lot of communities out there, spiritual communities, okay, but they are not the communities of light. Communities of light is the community that the people follow the eternal divine path. Okay, if we get together and we don't follow the eternal divine path, we are not the community. Okay? I mean, you're not the communities of light. Okay? That is the difference between the communities and the communities of light. And a part of the community of that being surrendered and submissive to the will of God. And the will of God is already given to us. Okay? Meditation and doing the exercise, directing all this energy toward the creation of the communities of light, or the second seal, sacrifice for that ideal, submission and surrender to the will of God, become a universalist, and you become a parabipra. Okay? You become a dynamic spiritual forces. Okay? That is the goal of each of us, if you want to make the comings of life. And that is the only people really, well, you don't have to be there right away when you come to the community or to the mission, but that is the goal. Eventually we reach a point that is the people are going to join or have to join the comings of life. And that is the person of God. The more people like that are created, the stronger the communities of light will become. And the new people who come to the communities of light, then they're just going to be right away, get into it. It's going to be talking about, all these teachings and sharing with one another. We really shouldn't talk about anything else. you know, about these teachings. You know, that is, the rest is really idle talk. And as Christ said, yea, yea, and nay, nay. Anything else besides that is idle talk. And is idle talk good? It's not good. Idle talk, you know, idle talks come from the first chakra. Okay, that's why it brings the energy down. Okay, the moment somebody starts giving idle talk, the energy goes boom, and everyone says, "Oh no, I don't want to hear this." Okay, so that's what happens, to be able not to get into that temptation. There's a lot of temptation to give idle talk. A lot of people love to sit and gossip and give idle talk and that. But that's not good. It's not good for you. It's not good for the other person. It's not good for the environment. And it's not good for the community. Okay. So we have to recognize, you know, then if we create such communities, that people always talk about God and different prophets and make movies. You can make movies of each of these seals, and then bring him back at the end, and so how they come together at the, you know, great sign and the eternal divine path. That's wonderful. It's gonna, the whole television gonna have all these wonderful things about different of education and how in the communities of life you can bring beautiful education to children. How the self-sufficient units are so important for our economy, and you know it's gonna solve our problem and all that. It's gonna be all wrapped up. Wrapping us up in this energy and flow, it's going to be much better environment than giving to the temptation another thing. So each person has to recognize and become the eternal divine path. Now, what is the relationship between all this and the fourth seal and the great sign? Does anybody know what are they? What's the relationship between the fourth seal and the great sign? It's the fourth seal and the great sign. Simple as it is. It shows that submission, his will, is necessary in order to the communities of light being manifested. We just explained why. Okay? Because if we are being without submission to the will of God, then each of us is going to have our own will and think what is the way it should be, you know. And it's going to all fall apart. Okay, that's why we accept 12 people. Of course, as we said, we are really not the communities of life. We are the facilitating body. We are trying to get this message to every corner on the earth. Okay, and eventually, communities of life are going to manifest everywhere like a mushroom. It's going to just come everywhere on the earth. Right now we are looking for 144,000 Maitreyas. Okay? After that, we got them, that this community is going to pop up everywhere, and they're going to choose their own leaders. Okay? As we said, 12 people are going to get together and have one leader, and 12 of such a 12 people are going to have another, and the 12 of such a 12 of 12 people are going to have a leader, and then we're going to have cities, and then have a providence, and the states, and the countries, and the on and on, and these leaders are going to come from bottom to the top. Okay. So there are 12 people, they get together, and one of them emerges as a leader. The leader has to emerge. Okay, it's not something that, you know, say, no, I'm leader, I'm going to take it over. You know, just like Haig did. Now I'm the leader over here. Okay. That doesn't work that way. You have to prove yourself. You have to, everybody accept you. Yes, you have the quality of the leadership. You are trustworthy. You are, you know, what you say, you back up what you say. You know, you're just not, you know, you can, you know, take charge. You can, you know, lead other people to a better place that where they are. Are you better off now than 4 years ago? See, that's the question. The leader has to improve your situation than, you know, bring it down. So these people, as I said, we are the facilitating body. These people are going to choose their 12 leaders and those 12. So hopefully they're going to choose a person who is connected to God. Okay? That is very important. To choose a leader, they are connected to God. If they are not, they are as lost as me and you. Okay? And then how they can lead us to where God wants to take us. Okay? So it is important that we have the leaders that are submissive and submitted to the will of God, and they know how to bring his energy and will to the community. It's a part of the plan of God, okay, the eternal divine path. Okay, the fourth seal is a part of his of the eternal divine path. Muhammad, as the Messiah, the first begotten Son of God, has brought it to us. Again, as we said, Adam brought the first teaching, then Noah and Abraham and on, and each time, as God said, Abraham is going to be the father of many. Actually, he's going to be blessed. Every nation is going to be blessed with him. How can every nation be blessed with him if he's not been born in every nation and was their leader and blessed them with his, you know, blessings and God's blessing? So that's how every nation is going to be blessed with him. Okay. So that's another clue that these things also that he is going to, in Revelation it says, he's going to open every seal. Okay. So it's all in the gates. It has to be, okay, done with the same individual over and over and over. So Adam is the same as Abraham, as Noah, as, you know, Moses, and on and on. Okay? Each seal in the great sign is a part of the great truth. The whole is greater than each part. The whole has life. Separate each organ part from the body, no life will exist. However, parts are needed for life to manifest. Okay? Now, each sign has great truth. And it brought the great part of the earth, okay, as a religion together. Okay? Now we put all of them together. What is greater? Is the whole greater than the part? Okay, so the whole great sign and our teaching is greater than each part. Just like each part in the great sign, just your head, your hand, your heart, your legs, your, you know, digestive system, each of them are important. Okay, but you separate them from each other, what's going to left? No life, isn't it? But put them together, then bring a spirit also to it, what's going to happen? You're going to have life. Okay. That's why there is so much strife and problems on earth between religions, because, you know, they're separated and they don't recognize how they are one. Okay, now you put them together, now you have the body, you have the whole thing together, and bring the truth which is greater than each of them, which is the mission, the spirit of the mission, then they're going to have life. Now human has no choice, they have to evolve to higher degree of understanding. They are not yet there. Okay, but they have to evolve to this understanding. There's one planet and one God and one eternal divine path, and that is the shortest way to reach to God. And God really exists. Okay, amazing as it sounds, but it's really true. God really exists. Okay, and if they recognize these things, they have no choice but become unified. Okay, each sign in the great sign are a part of a greater truth. The great sign and the eternal divine path, the whole is greater than the parts. The whole has many different parts as a body, many different organs. When these different parts, organs are put together, life can be manifested. Separate parts, organs, has no life. These organs together will need the spirit to have life. Without the spirit, which is, the mission is, as the body and all its components parts has to be received in whole. So another thing is that the whole mission is a whole package. Okay. You can accept a part of it and reject the other part. It can be done. Okay, just like as you say, you can have a heart and a mind, but you don't have any, you know, digestive system. Still, you're not going to live. Okay, so it's a whole body. You have to accept it. It's something that if you believe in it, you have to accept the whole thing. You know, a lot of people came to the mission, they said, yeah, we accept this one, this one, this one, but we don't accept that one. Okay? And it didn't work for them. Okay? You can't do that. It's impossible. Sorry, I wish you could. But it doesn't work. A teaching is the spirit, life given, life to these parts. This together will manifest the kingdom of heaven on earth. Okay. And that is exactly, that is what that stone is, which came from nowhere and hit that image in the vision of Daniel and broke the image to pieces. And actually you can see the whole earth is breaking to pieces right now. Okay. Actually you can see even countries, we're talking about unification and countries are parting apart. They become separated. Just even Canada is in verge of becoming separated. Yugoslavia, Russia, you know, all those places, just they're falling apart. They're to pieces. Accepting only one part, few parts of the mission, and rejecting others is like receiving a few organs of the body and rejecting and have normal life, receiving life. It will not work. Each part, however, is necessary for the body mission to function properly. Of course, some organs, parts are more vital than others. Some parts are like the brain in the body. If it is not there, the body will die. Some others are not that vital, but are good to have following acceptance. Some parts of the mission, of course, are not as vital as other parts, but it's good to have. It's like it's good to have 10 fingers. You probably can live with 9 fingers, but it's much easier living with the 10 fingers. Okay. And some parts of the mission are very important, just like your brain. If you don't have a brain, that's it. You're dead. Okay. So you have to have the brain. Even probably you can take one of your kidneys off and still live. Okay. But it's good to have 2 kidneys. Okay. So it's some part of the mission are vital. Eternal divine path is vital to understand and follow and become it and everything. You know, taking half a bath is good to do. It makes you refreshed and give you healthy body and cools you down, because heat in the body is one reason for a lot of disease. And when you cool yourself up, a lot of disease goes away from you. Okay. And heat also brings lethargyness. It makes you lethargic. Okay. And if you do the half a bath, especially if you can put the water over your nose and go through it, it really cools off your brain. Your brain starts working much better. Okay. But it is not vital. Okay. It's not something that if you don't do it, you don't go to heaven. The great sun and eternal divine paths are the answers for humanity, man's salvation physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, individually, and collectively. Okay. The mission is the whole body and soul. It has life. Okay. It's no longer is a part. They're not separated. It's not Christian, it's not Muslim, it's not Jews, it's not Hindus. All of them are accepted in it. Doesn't matter what is on this earth, if it's a mystical path, if it's a message by God, it's a part of the eternal divine path. We don't separate anyone. We don't exclude anyone. If they exclude themselves, it is their problem. We don't exclude them. They exclude themselves. It's just like, it's not God, we don't understand, we are a part of Him. It's our problem. We are a part of Him, if you like it or not. Okay? God is everything. So it's not God's problem if somebody says, no, 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 I'm not a part of this mission. To me, they are. Okay? To them, they are not. That's their problem. Okay? To me, there is no one on this earth who is not a part of this mission. Okay? So the mission is the whole body and the soul, that whoever accepts it, we become vital, become life. Okay? Because we have to forget about little, our little problems. There's greater thing, greater truth ever been on earth. And still we're hanging on our own little problems, and we cannot see the potential that is offered into you in the mission. Of course, I'm not saying you don't have problem. Nobody is earth that doesn't have problem. Everybody has problem. Even I have problem. Okay? There's no one who doesn't have problem. Okay? And they're not going to be solved. Even in communism of life, there's going to be problems. Okay? Not say, the moment you get into communism, oh, okay, I'm in heaven. All my problems are gone. I'm fine. No, you're going to have problems. But as I said, 99% of human problem is no problem. It's created by our own self. Okay. So if we get rid of 99% of the problem, we have only 1% real problem, and those can be solved much easier in collective, you know, effort and cooperation in the communes of life based on the eternal divine path. So the mission is the whole body and the soul. Any separation part not accepted, the whole will die fast. As I said, you have to be accepted the whole thing. If you don't accept the whole thing, it's not going to have a life. It's going to die very fast. It unifies all the great religions of the world. It fulfills all the prophecies. It shows the way to bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. It brings individual and collective salvation to humanity. Individual salvation is your meditation, your, you know, realization from self and getting rid of, you know, unwanted energies and problems and all those, and make your life much simpler, nicer, easier, so you can, you know, cope up with the other energies that you like to get, you know, into. And the simpler and easier the life, the simpler and easier it is to get rid of your problem. The more complex your life becomes, the more complex your problems will become. It's as simple as it is. And so this is individual, collective salvation is communities of light. It's easier in communities of light, have your physiological and safety needs to be taken care of. And so you can concentrate on your spiritual progress. And so that is physical and mental. Mentally, you are, as I said, the world life becomes more complicated. Mentally, you become more complicated, and it's harder to cope. It shows the shortest path to the highest spiritual achievements. It is the answer to all human longing, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, individually and collectively. So, do you have any questions? No? No? Sure. Okay.